Everyone. So good to see everybody together. I'm the guest speaker. Tonight we're going to be talking, as we continue our series on Jesus our Lord, we're going to talk about our interceder. You know, the more that you and I can come to know who God is and to know who Jesus is, it builds your faith, and I'm going to try to help that tonight, move us a little step further. I want you to open your Bible to John chapter 1. John chapter 1. Look at verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and apart from Him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. In the beginning, there was the Word. You see that term Word? That's not the term of a spoken word or a written word. It's different. Logos. It's a term that means the complete, entire embodiment of something. Jesus didn't come as a spoken word. He didn't come as a written word. A lot of times people use that, and they'll say every time they see the term word used in the Bible, that's Jesus. No, that's not. He was the Logos. He was the complete embodiment of who God is. If it would have said in the beginning was a word, that would have been a thought or something conveyed of the mind or written. But we're talking about the completeness, the wholeness of God Himself. So in the very beginning, there was this Word, this completeness of God, the whole of God. And He was with God. And He was God. Look down at verse 14 right quick. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we saw His glory, glory as the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. This complete embodiment of God became flesh, just like us. And everything came into being through Him. And the apostles witnessed this glory. We're going to see that tonight. I'm going to try to point this out. Knowing that, I want you to keep first our John 1 here marked. We're going to be right back over here in just a little bit. Come over to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. Look at verse 6. Knowing that Jesus is the Word, this completeness of God, and He became flesh, look at verse 6. Although He existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped. You know what Jesus didn't do? He didn't hold on to His deity. He didn't see it as something that needed to be grasped. Continue on. Look at verse 8. Being found in appearance as man, He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. What did he do? Jesus completely emptied himself of deity, even though he was God. He didn't hold on to that. People want to say, well, Jesus didn't sin because, you know, he's God. No, he emptied himself of everything that God was and God is. And notice he says here in verse 8, he took the form of a bondservant. Oh, that's verse 7. Verse 8, being found in the appearance as a man. Now notice this. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death. How far did the humility of Jesus take him? To what point? To the point of death, but not like our deaths. Notice how he ends up with that in verse 8. Even death on a cross. How many of you know of someone that died on a cross? Anybody been around anyone like that? I haven't. He didn't die just man's death. He died death on a cross. The most cruel and most inhumane form of dying. And he did it because of he humbled himself. Can you imagine coming from God, being God, and now this embodiment of God, he empties himself. God, I'm going to do it your way. I'll go with whatever you ask of me, even to the point of dying on a cross. I'm not going to die like man dies, like you and I, most of the time when we pass away, someone does. No, it's going to be death on the cross. Humility. Have you ever been around someone that said, when God asks of something of us, I'm not going to do that? That's pride. What if Jesus would have ever said, God, I'm not going to do that? Where would it have put us? Jesus emptied himself and took on the form of a bondservant. The incorruptible God for a weak, corruptible human. That's what he became. And then it took him all the way to death on a cross. And so you and I, we look at all of this, and it's hard to identify that Jesus would go to that extreme, to that point. Keeping these thoughts in mind, come back to Isaiah chapter 53, if you would. I'm going to try to paint a picture for your mind tonight. Because I do want you to see the depth of Jesus being God, and he emptied himself of everything God is and took on our form, and he humbled himself before God. I want you to die by the cross. You're not going to have a heart attack. You're not going to die of a disease. You're going to die on a cross. This great depth, Isaiah 53, and we're going to kind of stay here tonight. Isaiah pins this 700 years before Jesus is ever born. 700 years. What if I was to tell you tonight, we're in 2025. In 2725, this is going to happen. What would you think? Let it happen. That's 700 years away. I'm not going to be here. What I want you to see with that is that here's God 700 years before Jesus became man. All of this embodiment and this power and this mind of God had everything all worked out. And he's using the prophet Isaiah, and he said, he's going to tell you 700 years before it happens, and this is exactly how this man Jesus is going to go about things. You're going to see his humility and his willingness. Look at verse 1. Who has believed our message? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Who believed the message? Yeah, nobody. People didn't believe the message. Jesus came. And guess who the arm of the Lord was revealed to? Man, wasn't it? And so he asked the question that man has been revealed the arm of the Lord, and no one believed the message. Now, what I did and what we're going to do from this point, I went through and I looked up different Hebrew terms, because sometimes our English word doesn't cover it. But the depth and the beauty of the Hebrew language covers things. And I want to show you the beauty of all of this. Look at verse 2. For he, talking of Jesus, grew up before him, God, like a tender shoot, like a root out of parched ground. I mean, whenever you look at ground that's dried out, sometimes right under that surface, there's a little root. And the right ingredients get there, and what happens? Something comes forth. Well, here's Jesus growing up before God. Everybody's standing around, not aware of what's going on, and guess what happens? This little shoot comes up. Look at the rest of verse 2. He has no stately form or majesty that we should look upon him, nor appearance that we should be attracted to him. What did Jesus look like? Yeah, did he come with this stately look of this handsome, suave-looking guy? Is that how he came? Did he have an appearance that would, wow, that guy's good-looking, that he attracted people because of his appearance? You know, sometimes you see these pictures, they have this shroud that they say that was covered the face of Jesus. And so they made a picture of him off that shroud. How's he always pictured? Oh, good looking, isn't he? And even paintings you see of Jesus sometimes, you know, this long flowing locks and blue eyes. Never seen a Jew with the blue eyes. And so right off the bat, guess how he showed up? Ordinary, just like everybody else. He was as common looking of a Jew as any other Jew. He wasn't attractive and didn't attract. He wasn't the Hollywood type. This is Jesus. Continue on, look at verse 3. He was despised and forsaken of men. How did man treat him? They treat him well. He was despised. That word despised literally means a scorned man. He was scorned by man disdainfully. That's what that word despised. Can you imagine to be scorned by people around you? In other words, when we talk about scorn, give me another way to say it. looked down upon? Yes. You ever heard someone say about another person, I can't stand to be around them? That's scorn. Well, guess what? They didn't want to be around him. Man didn't. He said that he was despised and forsaken by man. You see that term forsaken? Abandoned. Man abandoned Jesus. Think about that. What is he learning being found in the form of a bondservant? Just from what we see here. What do you learn about Jesus? Ordinary looking. People didn't want to be around him. And people abandoned him. This is all going to come into play in just a moment. Look at verse 3 again. He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. You see that word sorrows? This is an interesting word. It encompasses physical sorrow and emotional. You ever thought about Jesus having to have emotional sorrow? Where he know, I mean, if you've been scorned, if you've been abandoned, what kind of sorrows would you feel emotionally? Sometimes I've known people who maybe a parent abandoned them. And it created great sorrow within their being. Especially mentally, that you mean I wasn't even worth them staying around for? Well, here's Jesus. He was a man of physical and emotional sorrows. And notice the next statement right after that. Acquainted with grief. Acquainted. He knew what grief was. He wasn't just like, you know, you go up to somebody and you meet them for the first time, you shake their hand. Well, I got acquainted with them just on a very surface level. No, this acquainted here is a very deep personal knowing. He was acquainted with grief. Can you imagine the physical and the mental sorrows? And he firsthand was pals with grief. This is the man that took on the form of a bondservant. This was the one that was with God and that was God. And God sent him to man, and God didn't play favorites with him. He didn't make him handsome. And the first things he did, he was despised, he was forsaken, he wasn't attractive. Learn this, brethren. We're learning something about Jesus tonight. God did not withhold from him pain and sufferings that a man or a woman might experience on this earth. He did not withhold that. Even though that's his son, he saw it all the way through. Continue on. A man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, and like one from whom men hide their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. There's that despised again. Don't want to be around him. How did man see Jesus? What do you think about when you read something like one from whom men hide their face? All of this is very important to seeing the value of Him interceding for us. Men hide their face. How many encounters did Jesus have in the temple with the Pharisees? And what did they do to Him most of the time? How many times was He run out of cities where He went in preaching? How many times did people pick up stones to want to stone Him? I mean, men want to hide their face from Him. He was despised, and yet what does He say there at the end of verse 3 that man did not do? They did not esteem Him. They didn't place any value on Him at all. I want to show you something real quick. Come over to Hebrews chapter 5. We're coming right back here. Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5. You know, when you talk about acquainted with griefs and sorrows, look at verse 7. In the days of His flesh, He offered up both prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one able to save Him from death, and He was heard because of His piety. What did He do in His own life? If you're acquainted with sorrows and griefs, what did He do? When He prayed, how did He pray? God, You got to help me out today. Loud crying and tears. You know, we don't know when Jesus would slip off to the mountains alone to pray. We don't know exactly what happened there. We know what happened in Gethsemane, but we don't know what had happened when He'd go into the mountains to pray. Can you imagine not being valued at all, despised by everybody? You have these sorrows and these griefs. He feels every bit of it, and when He goes to pray, loud crying and tears. Does He know something about humanity? And why did God hear Him? What's piety? God heard Him because of His piety. Piety is because of His fear of God and His great respect for who God is. For you see, He Himself was God, and He emptied Himself of that and found Himself in the form of man. And so being respectful of who God is and fear God, God heard Him. What does that tell us in our relationship to God? Should there be some fear and respect from us to God? Absolutely. Absolutely. Continue on. Come back here to Isaiah 53. Look at the end of verse 3 again. He was despised and we did not esteem Him, place any value on Him. Knowing all of this about Jesus, I'd ask you to keep John 1 marked. Come back over there right quick right now. John 1. Show you a couple of more things. Look at verse 10. He was in the world, and the world was made through Him, and the world did not know Him. What about His creation? They didn't know who He was. Look at verse 11. He came to His own. We're talking about the Jews. And those who were His own did not receive Him. How did the Jews receive Jesus? They didn't. They rejected Him. Did you know Jesus was rejected from the moment He was born? When He was at, Mary gave birth to Him at Bethlehem, you have a moment where there's this woman who's about to give birth. There was no place for her to stay. What would a normal human do if you had any care and concern at all? Take my place. Here's a bed for you. From the very beginning of the birth of Jesus, He was rejected by man. And so now as we see that He was not esteemed, He was despised, He comes to His own, they didn't receive Him. They don't want Him around. What do you see about Jesus' life? Was it difficult? He had a lot of difficulties here just to communicate with His Jewish brethren. Come back to 53, look at verse 4. Surely our griefs He Himself bore, and our sorrows He carried. What did He do with griefs? He bore them. What about sorrows, that physical and emotional? He carried them. And He carried them, our sorrows He carried. Look at the end of verse 4. Yet we, from man's viewpoint, yet we ourselves esteemed Him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. How did people see Jesus? You must be cursed by God to go through everything you're going through. Nobody likes to be around you. Nobody wants you. They saw Him as forsaken by God, smitten of God. And knowing that, here He's carrying this load physically and mentally. And it comes into play when you read places like Mark 15:34, when Jesus cried out from the cross, "My God, my God, why have You forsaken Me?" The very last thing He had to hold to. And where did He find Himself? Alone. Continue on. We can see in all of that, He's bearing everything. Verse 5. But He was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquity. Why did God pierce Him to the depth of His soul? Why was He pierced? Why did He get down there so deep? It was for our transgressions. What you're seeing in all of this and what I'm seeing, this is the depth of sin that created between man and God. And Jesus said, "I'll become obedient, I'll be humble all the way, even death on the cross." and even my God has forsaken me. I'm carrying the whole load. And so he was pierced for that. He knows the depths of that. He says here in verse 5, the chastening of our well-being fell upon him. What is chastening? Would say? Chastening is correction and punishment because we're trying to bring about something positive. When you chasten your children, they're punished because you want to bring about a positive correction in their life. Here's Jesus carrying the load. And guess what? He was corrected. He was punished to carry the whole load, to bring about some good things out of him. Wow. And he did it voluntarily. The incorruptible or corruptible, evil, sinful man. Middle of verse 5. The chastening of our well-being fell upon him, and by his scourging, we are healed. What did God know the depth of healing for man's sins? How far was God willing to go with it? It's the only way you can be healed from this brutal thing called sin. Continue on verse 6. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. All of us. Here's God, 700 years before, has all of this worked out in the life of His Son. Has all this worked out in his mind? And what does he know about man? Is anyone exempt? No, all of us have gone astray and turned aside to his own ways. You know what the prodigal did? Luke 15, you know the prodigal son? He went to the father. Who did the father represent in that? God, give me what's mine, I'm going. He took off, he went his own way to do his own thing. That's us. When you read the prodigal, you're reading about you and about me. And then he says, the end of verse 6, yeah. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of all of us to fall upon him. Guess what? All of our guilt fell on who? Jesus. You know what? It's Jesus is the only way that can get us to return to God. It had to be this way. There's no other way around it. And he had to go through all of this torment and torture, both physically and mentally. Continue on verse 7. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to slaughter, and like a sheep that is silent before his shears, so he did not open his mouth. How did he go about all this? Quiet. You never hear Jesus, you're violating my rights. I've got a right. You never heard him scream or holler at people for taking advantage of him and doing things so shamefully to him. He never talked about his rights. So here he is. He kept silent. Why did he keep silent? That's the depth of humility. That's humility in practice. This is what the Lord has given me, and I will accept it, even to death on the cross. Verse 8, by oppression and judgment he was taken away. How was he scooped up? Was he oppressed? There was a judgment, right? Look at the rest of verse 8. And as for his generation, who considered that he was cut out of the land of the living for the transgression of my people to whom the stroke was due? What did man fail to recognize? What did they fail to recognize? He's there on their behalf. I watch people all the time. They go off into sin and different things like that, have no clue what they're doing. They're not even aware. That's what man did. All these things that were happening to Jesus, man never even thought, why is this happening to him? They thought he was forsaken and cursed by God. They didn't want anything to do with him. And here he is. Here he is. The transgression that was due the people. He was dying for people. People, us, should have had this stroke due to us. Nobody even considered that. Verse 9. And by the way, verses 7 and 8, those two verses in Acts chapter 8, that's what the Ethiopian eunuch was reading when Philip came by and taught him Jesus. Verse 9, his grave was assigned with wicked men, yet he was with a rich man in his death. 700 years before it happened. And Jesus dies between two wicked men. And you know why? Guilty by association. We'll put them two on either side of him. And that way he doesn't stand out. He's guilty too. Guilty by association. And so here he says he was with a rich man in his death. When you get over to places like Matthew chapter 27, verse 57, there's a rich man by the name of Joseph of Arimathea. He said he was a rich man. He's the one that went and got the body of Jesus and laid it in a new tomb. And God said, this is what I'm going to have happen. Even before Jesus is born. All worked out before it happens. Continue on. Middle of verse 9. Why did this happen? Because he had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. Verse 10. But the Lord. Those are three great words. But the Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. If he would render himself as a guilt offering, he will see his offspring and prolong his days. You know what pleased God? The only way God could be pleased. Jesus, would you come as this guilt offering, this sin offering? And I'll make sure that in the end, I'm going to make your days prolonged, and you're going to have offspring as a result. And the Lord was pleased to do that with him. In Romans chapter 4, verse 25, it says that he was delivered over because of our transgressions, our sinfulness. He was raised because of our justification, acquittal. All of this is the only way that you and I can be acquitted and the payment of sin. Verse 11. As a result of the anguish of his soul, he, God, will see it and be satisfied. How did God see this anguish upon Jesus' soul? Satisfied. I want to point out one thing to you right quick. We're going to have to draw this all together. This is the only time you'll find in Scripture that God was ever satisfied. He saw a lot of good things in creation, but he was satisfied upon crushing and killing his son. The demands for sin now have been met in Jesus, every one of them. He says, as a result of the anguish of his soul, he will see it and be satisfied. By his knowledge, the righteous one, my servant will justify, acquit the many, as he will bear their iniquities. Verse 12, therefore, I will allot him a portion with the great, and he will divide the booty with the strong. There's coming out great things as a result of his death. Because he poured himself out to death and was numbered with the transgressors, yet he himself bore the sins of many. Now look at the end of verse 12. And interceded for the transgressor. What did he end up doing? Interceded for whom? All mankind. Who is this fellow that died? He's more than just Jesus. He's God in the flesh. And you go back through and you think about the physicality, you think about the mental, and I hear so many people today, I can't handle it mentally. What about Jesus? Did he endure it? Did he endure it with humility? Come over right quick with me to Hebrews chapter 2. Let's tie this together. Hebrews chapter 2. Verse 17. This will make a lot of sense now. Therefore, he had to be made like his brethren in all things, that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the things pertaining to God, to make propitiation, satisfaction for the sins of the people. Guess who he was made like? Every one of us. And so many times in our lives, we get to a point, we think, I can't handle it anymore. What are we doing? We've taken our eyes off of Jesus. Come over to chapter 7 while you're here. Hebrews chapter 7, look at verse 25. Therefore, he is able, mark that word able, he is able to save forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. Why is he living now? Can you imagine? What do you think is going on between Jesus and God right now? And I look at me and you look at you and we see the flaws and the limitations. And yet, what's going on between God and Jesus? And the next time you go falling down and you cry out to God, I don't know if I can endure this. I don't know if I can take this anymore. I don't know why all this is happening. What's Jesus telling God? I was there too. I know the physicality. I know the mental strain. And so guess what he can do? Can he come and rescue you? You know, a lot of times when things get so tough in our lives and we want to give up, don't forget about Jesus. He didn't for your behalf, and he's interceding for your behalf. So what should you be able to find? Back to chapter 4. Look at chapter 4. Verse 16. Therefore, let us draw near. You need to make a right move. Draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy. Oh, sometimes we make horrible mistakes. He knows that. And find grace to help in time of need. If you get to where you can't take it anymore, what do you need? Do you need help from God? Is Jesus there interceding on your behalf? Does he know exactly what you need to get you through that? What if you draw near to God through Jesus? What should you find? Grace. The favor of God to help in your time of need. And Jesus is the reason for that. He intercedes for you. And you know, no one knows us like God. And so when Jesus intercedes, God knows every aspect of your life. He knows every single thing you're going through. He knows the mental suffering. He knows the physical suffering. And therefore, he knows exactly what you need to help in your time of need. What is the value of Jesus? Whew. Is that good news? Our interceder. One more thing, and I've said this before, and now it's going to make more sense. The next time you hear someone say, "You don't understand what I'm going through," I may not, but I know one who does. And then you can't tell me anything till you've walked in my shoes. Question. How many of us in here tonight have ever walked in the shoes of Jesus? Hey, what? There you go. Walk in his shoes. He walked in our shoes, and he went beyond that. He knows exactly what you need and why you need it. And when you're going through a difficulty, the question is, what is God trying to get me to see? Are we just going to walk around blind and say, "Well, I don't know why this happened. I don't know why I have to go through all this. I don't know what's happening to me." Who considered when he was cut out of the land of living? Who considered his dying was for you? That you can go to him and let him intercede for you. I pray it helps. If there's something I missed, let me know. I'm here. I won't hit you or anything. Just don't hit me. We have a great, great Savior. We have a great Lord. And the word, the name of Jesus, is bigger than any name that we could ever even imagine. Have a good rest of the week. Thank you so much.